This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q. Citizen and Friends program. And in this hour, we're going to speak to Dr. Mark Bailey, doctor who came from or comes from New Zealand, who practiced up until 2016 and had a change of heart. And I'll tell you what, when you can give your life's work to the medical profession and turn your back on it, then there is a story and a half in that, I swear there must be. And I'm delighted to bring Mark on in a few minutes' time to delve deeply into his work and his new work, because he hasn't walked away from education and understanding what's going on out there in the real world. On the contrary, he's delving deeper into a world that's going to uncover all of the secrets, and goodness me, it's going to let us out of here at some stage. Now, speaking of being let out, one of the great tyrants in this whole caper has been the Premier of Victoria, Daniel Andrews. That man stood there, stone-faced, determined. This is a man who, as revealed last week on the show from a man who worked with him, Jeff Shaw, in his book, Dan Andrews Unmasked, revealed that this is a guy that went straight from school to the political machine, became elected health minister and then premier, seemingly never had a job in the real world in his life. Well, today it turns out that there has been a damning IBAC report, that is a group of exploring corruption here in Australia, particularly in Victoria, that finds that there was a catalogue of unethical behaviour within Daniel Andrews-led Victorian Labor Party. Victoria's anti-corruption watchdog said responsibility has to lie with leadership after a new report revealed the shocking culture within the Andrews-led Victorian Labor Party. So you can be as corrupt as you like and tell everyone that they must do exactly what you say, and we're all just meant to go along with it. And this is what I alluded to in the first hour when I was talking about the idea of risk versus reward, and the idea that governments use this practice of trying to masquerade as removing all risk. So in other words, problem, reaction, solution. COVID comes along, is the great threat and the great illustration that we saw in the early days out of China with the people collapsing. And then we went over to Italy and we saw thousands of people seem to die very, very quickly over there. And all of a sudden, governments of the world jump on the bandwagon and the great story was unleashed upon us. And so governments all around the world, including Andrews, get up there and bang the same drum and have no idea what to do except to lock us all down and wait for a vaccine with this one-size-fits-all solution that fits no one at all. But this is the bandwagon that they all join. So what's going to be terrific about the conversation I'm going to have with Dr. Mark Bailey in a moment is that he has written a paper called The COVID-19 Fraud and War on Humanity that is going to be able to apply a doctor's eye view on exactly this whole narrative as it stands out. Because yes, COVID came along, but did COVID come along before or after a solution was already thought of? Because if the solution was ready to go, and this is not necessarily the solution, but the solution that is of the great authorities that stems all the way up to this great big head of the snake, the globalist organizations such as the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all the usual suspects, how is it that they knew, and how is it that they were able to have all this ready to go and get this vaccine out in record time? This is the great mystery. And so it is that I bang on about the idea of getting to the origins of COVID, because when we get to the said origins of this virus, we'll be able to determine whether it was real, whether it was natural, whether it was manufactured, or was it something else altogether? And how come the solution was already set to go? Because somewhere in there, someone knew something, and therefore there is the idea of intent. And with intent, the idea of the great reset, Klaus Schwab, changes, doesn't it? All of a sudden, the great reset backfires, and there'll be the great Well, the great class action resulting in something else more great that will benefit the people instead of those people who want to take over the population of the planet. Well, it might be a little bit confusing, but it's really an us versus them scenario. So we arrive at a solution, perhaps, but certainly a conversation on this great war on humanity. Now, don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anytime, anywhere. Available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Your trusted news source.
Something you just can't question.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Dr. Mark Bailey is a New Zealand, or was a New Zealand medical doctor from 1999 to 2016, including several years as a research physician in clinical trials. He decided to quit medical practice in 2016 as he stopped believing in allopathic medicine. He's the husband of Dr. Sam Bailey, and they have been providing health information to the public since early 2020, particularly about COVID-19, whether viruses exist, whether microbes can transmit disease, and vaccines. Dr. Mark Bailey, welcome to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program.
Thank you, Jason. Absolute pleasure to be here.
And likewise to have you on the show. And as I introduced a few minutes ago, Mark, I think it takes a very, very special person to commit and do all of that work and give what appears to be 25 or 30 years of your life to the study of medicine and yet to walk away from it. Because one of the biggest questions I've had for the doctors that I've spoken to, particularly those privately, is why can't the doctors organize, go on strike and end this chaos probably in as little as 3 or 4 days?
I think, Jason, people often have this impression of doctors being of a certain personality type or operating with a certain amount of ethics or morals. And perhaps disappointingly for a lot of people, their personalities are no different from the general population. Certainly they do have skill sets that are slightly different, but I think at the end of the day, they operate with exactly the same set of incentives and disincentives as everyone else. And perhaps for some of them, it's even worse because, as you mentioned, it's a huge investment you make to become a doctor with regards to the time that you've put into it. And also, too, because people get into a position where they're very well paid. And for virtually any doctor you talk to, they have no other way to match the income they can make through medicine, which is generally, it remains a very well-paid job. I'm not saying that it's an easy job, but most of us that have been involved with it would not say that there's a lack of money being paid to us as individuals. So I think for a lot of people, it's just, that's what it comes down to. It's the position that they're in life. They've got a mortgage to pay. They've got a lifestyle to keep. And for most people, walking away from that is just a price that they're not prepared to pay. And there's also the professional reputation. And as you're probably aware, those of us doctors that step out of line from the mainstream belief system have to be prepared to take a lot of flack. And for many doctors, it's a case of Russell conjugation. They just think of what will happen. What's the likely scenario if I speak out of turn here? And I think for a lot of them, they run it through their mind and think it's just not worth it.
Wow, isn't it an amazing reductionism approach to come to a conclusion, I'm better off to just go along to get along and just stay in my lane. And yet every doctor still takes the Hippocratic Oath. And one wonders at that point, because it must become a conscience vote, an internal conscience vote to say, I can't do this anymore. Whereas another doctor says, oh, no, I can just cope with it. Or am I digging or burying my head in the sand? For example, I spoke to some doctors regarding the level of reading and research that they keep up with. And I said, do you read all this stuff? And they said, I haven't got time to read all that. And that, to me, showed a huge leap of faith that the general public has, that they believe that all their doctors are reading up on everything as they come through, which seemingly would be impossible. And for mine, I had that same belief system too. And the reason I did, would you believe it, was because I had a problem with my car, a European car I owned a few years ago, and my mechanic, a European specialist, was telling me about how much he had to read up on all of these different cars and makes and models, etc. And he said, I spend half my day reading. So I figured if my mechanic was doing all this reading, then my doctor must also be doing all of this reading. But this isn't necessarily the case at all, is it?
No, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. For most clinicians, most medical practitioners, the vast majority of their time is spent in clinics or in surgery, seeing the patients, writing up their notes, carrying out the treatments, etc. They do not have time to read the research and in general, and rely usually on other sources. So obviously in countries like Australia and New Zealand, we have ministries and departments that are supposed to collate the research and come up with policies. And that flows down to the doctors, who then basically just follow whatever the protocols say. So there is a real problem in medicine in that progressively individual practice and people's own research has gradually disappeared. And we've morphed into the system, which is extremely protocol driven. And it's one of the reasons I quit medical practice in 2016, because when I saw a patient, essentially you just had to tick boxes. And if you went outside of recommended protocols or what they call things like best practice these days, you can actually get in trouble with the authorities. So most people, it's easier just to follow what happens. So yeah, for say my wife, Sam, and I, we're in a different position now. So we don't see patients day to day anymore, and we've become professional researchers. And it is such a different perspective. It's unbelievable. And some of the revelations we've made about what we thought were established facts have proven to be not the case at all. And one of the biggest ones relates to virology and germ theory in general. And a lot of what we were taught in medical school and then encouraged to do in our clinical practice was incredibly based on virtually no evidence whatsoever. And it's been amazing in this last 3 years or so for us of being able to dedicate ourselves full time to going back through hundreds of years of medical papers, scientific papers, and seeing where the evidence actually lies. And, you know, you hear the phrase, just follow the science, which is what nobody really does. And we have actually been following the science and checking, have these premises been established by following the scientific method? And there's huge areas of medicine where it simply hasn't happened. And we're sorry to say that in allopathic or mainstream medicine, there's so much of it that has no evidence base whatsoever. And our investigations lead us to believe it's actually damaging to the public. And I know the mainstream is aware that there's iatrogenic illness and that the medical system does cause problems, and it will put some sort of estimate on it, like 15% or something like that. We would say it's much worse than that. It would be 80% or higher potentially. And we generally, yeah, for a lot of things these days, we do not advise people get into the medical system, because it's likely to be at best neutral and at worst very harmful for them.
This is something that many of us have suspected and felt a little bit crazy to think of it, but you've just sort of nailed it. Like 15% is a shocking number. 80% mm-hmm. just blows your mind to think that you're probably better off working out other ways of looking out for yourself and certainly taking different precautions. I mean, I met a GP when my mother was ill. She was suffering from a cardiac angiosarcoma, which is heart cancer, very, very rare. And we met a very good GP here in New South Wales, and he explained to us when he was looking after her that for him, his light bulb moment was 15 years prior, where he realised that they'd never studied nutrition at university. It was like 4 hours out of a six-year course. And he said for him, that was his light bulb moment. And since studying nutrition, he said City had a lot of success in dealing with people with cancer at a GP level and was able to provide different formats. He said, and some of the stuff he said I'm going to prescribe you is not even available in Australia. So it certainly is an eye-opener when you realize that when you find a good doctor, and everyone likes to find their good family doctor, but it certainly proves, doesn't it, that not all doctors were created equal, as you explained earlier, and yet doctors are really just a subset of society at the same time. So at a moment when we are becoming certainly a lot less trusting of our institutions, it feels like we are justified in that based on your own experiences, Mark, that are showing us that that all of us need to take a more of a hands-on approach in understanding what's going on. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to just delve a little bit deeper and then apply that to the work that you did in this paper, the COVID-19 fraud and the war on humanity, because it goes a long way to understanding the great setup and the reason why we need to take control of our own lives and navigate this great big fog that the powers that be are setting out for us to make it so confusing and basically trying to just force us into compliance. In the meantime, don't go anywhere, because you're listening to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends on TNT Radio.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
Over the last couple of years, there's probably been an increasing confusion between a patient and the doctor. Part of the chaos of the coronavirus and the COVID work that's being done. Is there a changing of the goalposts and the doctors being struck off around the world for having a position on being a doctor, a family doctor, or whatever? What's going on there?
It's a fascinating situation. I've just come back from Brazil, where we had a gathering of probably around about 1,000 doctors and health professionals, mainly from Latin America. But essentially, the doctors now that are being struck off or are at risk of being struck off haven't even done any harm.
Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Nearly every day, we hear dire predictions about climate change from the media establishment, Hollywood, and politicians. They tell us that the world is coming to an end because normal human activity is raising the temperature to dangerous levels. To avoid a hellish apocalypse, they warn us we must immediately change our lifestyles and our very way of life. But are these sensational claims based on solid empirical science? Do the facts line up with the hype? Well, an increasing number of scientists are becoming skeptical. We covered what many of these scientists had to say in our first groundbreaking film, Climate Hustle. From overhyped claims about severe weather events, temperatures, rising sea levels, and even disappearing polar bears, Climate Hustle peeled back the hype and looked at the facts, facts that simply don't add up to any reason for alarm. So this begs the questions. Why would those claiming a global warming catastrophe spread a false narrative? What would motivate them? Why would they try to hustle you? Are they trying to control the climate or you? Well, those are the questions we're going to explore in this film. And the answers may shock you. Order your DVD, Blu-ray, or digital copy today of Climate Hustle 2.
To find out more, go to climatehustle2.com.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Mark Bailey from New Zealand, who is with me to discuss the COVID-19 fraud from a different perspective. This is a doctor who has walked away from the profession to become a researcher after putting in almost 20 years of service with patients. Now, Mark, one of the biggest problems here is the understanding of virology. Or in fact, is virology something completely different? Where does the confusion start, and what aren't we being told?
Well, first of all, Jason, this is a huge topic, and we're only going to be able to cover a limited amount. We could talk here for days. So I'll just say to your audience as well, there's a huge amount of material available on our website, so drsambailey.com. So if people want to go there, there's articles, there's dozens and dozens of videos and other resources that you can download. So We'll give a bit of an overview here, but sure, there'll be a lot of blanks for the audience, and I suggest they go and check out the material there for full comprehensive coverage of some of these topics. But yes, so virology is, we didn't know much about it 3 years ago, and apart from what we'd been taught at medical school and I guess folklore, as you pick up growing up from your grandma and everyone else telling you about this the so-called viruses that circulate. And what is apparent with virology is that it was a theory originally put forward in the 1800s when they struggled to find explanations as to why some people were getting unwell. And because sometimes they'd get unwell in a particular area at the same time, they thought there must be some sort of transmissible agent. But what most people don't realize is that when they developed the theory, over time, it became from a fluid contagion model to a infectious protein model to the current model we have, which is the pictures that everyone will be familiar with, the little protein coat, the coronas have the spikes around it, and the genetic material on the inside, which can be the DNA or RNA. And it's obviously it's got these physical properties that I've just talked about, but it also has biological properties, which is that it gets into a host cell and replicates. It makes more copies of itself and then spills out of the cell and goes on to infect other cells and transmit that way. Now, that's a very specific theory. And when I was training as a doctor, I thought this had all been establish as fact, that when they showed us the diagrams in the textbook of these viruses getting into things and replicating and passing on to other people, we thought this was based in scientific studies following the scientific method that had been extremely well established. But it's not the case at all. And I don't think many of the public realize the amount of deception that's happened in the last 100 plus years to continue this fraud of presenting the viral model as though it's based in fact. So we can talk about a couple of different aspects of the fraud. Something that probably is easy to understand for most people is the the alleged property that it transmits from human to human. Now, you'd think that would be easy to show in a study. You'd simply get someone who had this alleged viral disease and bring them in contact with other people and see if it transmits to them. But what's apparent, if you go back through all of the literature published and some of the stuff that they don't want published that's come to light, is that there's a 100% failure rate to transmit what they say are viral illnesses through natural routes between humans. And what they've done is the papers that claim that they did demonstrate this transmission have resorted to all sorts of methods. For instance, with some of the herpes and varicella type viruses, they've taken fluid from a patient, like from a blister or something, and then injected it into another human being and said, oh, well, it caused a skin reaction in this human, therefore it's transmissible. But that's not the model that they're selling to the public. They're saying that it transmits in the air and you breathe it in and that's how you get sick. But none of the studies actually show that. In every single study we've looked at, whether it's, they don't do many human ones, it's hard to get ethics for that, but they still do a lot of animal studies, with monkeys and ferrets and so forth. And it's the same problem with the animal studies, is that there's no demonstrated natural transmission route. So if you have a monkey that's said to have a viral infection and you put it in a cage with another monkey, a healthy one, nothing happens at all to the healthy monkey. And they've had the same problem where they've tried to get what they thought were viruses and put them into the air and expose the animals to the viruses that way. And that didn't do anything either. So they have basically no evidence whatsoever that these particles that they call viruses can transmit between humans or transmit between animals. And probably the biggest failure, that, and it's really good because more people are aware of this these days, is that during the Spanish flu, they did multiple studies trying to transmit what they thought was a virus between humans. They did all sorts of things. They took snot from people. They took blood from people. They made people swallow the sputum. They sprayed it in their face. They even injected some of this material into other recipients. And again, 100% failure rate to transmit what they thought was a highly infectious disease between human beings. So these days, they kind of don't do that kind of stuff anymore because it's just way too obvious that you can't transmit the disease that way. So what they tend to do these days is we've got all this high technology stuff that they use, like PCR and genomics, antigen tests, lateral flow tests and stuff, and antibody studies in blood, all that sort of stuff. And they're presenting this as evidence that viruses exist. But you don't need any of those things to have the existence of viruses. We know that. But unfortunately, it's being sold to the public as evidence that the viruses do exist. So when this whole COVID thing was announced in sort of late 2019, early 2020, researchers like Sam and myself went and had a look at these papers to see what they were actually describing. And was there something in the paper that demonstrated that there was this infectious particle that can pass around? And absolutely, there was nothing there to show that there was a virus. It was all based on computer simulations of detecting various genetic sequences in their samples. And that's a huge part, unfortunately, of the fraud. So while people are debating, you know, face masks and vaccines and lockdowns and political policy, that we think it's missing the foundational fraud, which is that there is no virus. There's nothing there. It's all based on nothing.
Wow, so much more to talk about after the break. We're going to pause for news headlines. You're on TNT Radio.
With a quick check of the day's headlines, I'm Matt Boyland. US President Joe Biden has come under fire for his soft stance at the border and flooding America with immigrants at a time when the country is already under immense economic pressure. China has warned it'll take forceful measures if the US House Speaker visits Taiwan next month, and the European Union has admitted its sanctions on Russia are not intended to stop the fighting, but rather to kill the Russian economy.
Silence for thinking differently?
Silence for thinking differently?
Not here. Silence for asking questions?
Not here.
Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, and it is very, very enlightening to speak with Dr. Mark Bailey about the concept of what we're dealing with here in COVID-19, the great fraud and the war on humanity. And before the break, we were just talking about the great deception involved in virology itself. Now, the fraud that is the COVID-19 principle here. Now, clearly people are getting sick and there's similar symptoms, although they're certainly not the same symptoms. And those that report getting it, whether they test for it or they don't, there's a similar set of symptoms that people get. Some people don't get it. And this is the funny thing, isn't it, that you can test on a PCR that we're all quite aware that this PCR can find anything it needs to and ramp up as high as it needs to do that. And yet you get a positive test reading, no symptoms. And then they talk about asymptomatic spread. This must be stuff that you must pull your hair out when you hear, Mark. Makes no sense.
Well, absolutely. And again, what we do is we go back to the original studies. So the PCR protocol for COVID was developed in January 2020 by the Corman-Drosten team. And you can read their paper, and there's no mention of it diagnosing a clinical illness at all. And this is the problem, because for people that can't read the paper, they just read the headline, basically, or the abstract, and think that, oh, well, look, they've developed a test for this, quote, virus. But that's not what the paper shows. The paper just shows that they designed a PCR to pick up certain sequences, but they never showed where those sequences came from. They were of unknown provenance. And we know now that you find these sequences all over the place, you know, whether it's in humans' noses or on pawpaws or on goats.
In the sewer.
Motor oil. Yeah, yeah, all over the place. It's just an absolute joke. So with the PCR, there was no clinical validation study. Now, I'm a total skeptic about using PCR at all in this application. But if you were going to, you need to do a clinical validation study, and that should involve thousands of people. It should be blinded. There should be proper controls, et cetera. But that was never done at all. So we could see the fraud in real time back in January, because Corman Drosten invent this test, and within hours, before they even published it, it appeared on the WHO's website as the way to diagnose COVID-19. And this is the same problem with the antigen tests, because I actually wrote an article about the antigen tests, because so many people, that they exploded obviously once they let these tests into the public. And everyone started saying, oh my goodness, I've got it, you know, and it apparently means, what they think it means is that they've picked up this infection. When, again, to give you an example, when they released the lateral flow or the antigen tests in New Zealand, I contacted the distributor and just asked them, where are the clinical validation studies? What does this diagnose? They had nothing. And then you can look at the information that these tests come with, and what are they calibrated to? Well, they're calibrated to the PCR. What's the PCR calibrated to? It's calibrated to no clinical condition. So again, it's just piggybacking one nonsensical thing on another. And if you follow it back, as we have, and you follow all the trails back, it always ends up in the same place, that there's no virus at the start. It leads back to absolutely nothing. So that is the problem, is that the PCR and the lateral flow tests or the rat tests have created this illusion that there are cases everywhere. Like, to give you an example, say in Australia, up until 2020, there are about 2,000 deaths attributed to influenza each year in Australia. And in 2020, 2021, it basically went to zero. And yes, you'll see them make up all sorts of ridiculous excuses as to why that was. But, I mean, to those of us observing it carefully, we can see what happened was that they were just repackaging and calling existing illnesses something else. So we had, like you say, we're not saying that people aren't getting sick. The people are definitely getting sick. And I think with the amount of stress people have been under for the last couple of years, they're probably getting sicker than normal. But in general, colds and flus and a whole lot of other illnesses have all just been repackaged because of the PCR or the rat tests. And what people need to understand is that if you look up the WHO's definition of COVID-19 or your own country's health authority's definition of COVID-19, a confirmed case usually comes down to one thing, and that's the positive PCR test, which is obscene. It's just circular reasoning. It's saying that a case is a positive test, and a positive test means that you're a case, but it's just a circular loop. There's no way to get in or out of it. You can't do a confirmatory test or have an independent way of checking whether that's true. So that's... That's really the first part of the fraud, is that there's, from what we can see, there's no proof of a virus. And the second part of the fraud are tests that are not calibrated to diagnose anything in human beings.
Goodness me, it's a massive, well, it's total medical fraud in all of it, and it beyond most people to understand, even in the medical profession, as I think we established earlier in this interview, that Corman Drosten, that study that led to the test, I do recall very specifically both Gates and Fauci coming out in that early days, and it was Gates with the hands in the air, we've got the gold standard test, it's called PCR. So clearly he's got this, it's almost as if this was ready to go, and that's how they did it. If I could just sidestep for just a moment on this PCR test, this was the same test, or is the same test, that is used, I understand, to detect HIV viral load. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is. This is quite funny. Actually, Sam did a video about this, because PCR is not used to diagnose HIV primarily.
Correct.
And this is quite interesting, because You know, I heard Australia's Sharon Lewin from Doherty Institute talking about this. It might have been back in 2020. And she was saying that, you know, this COVID-19 PCR, it's a great diagnostic tool, et cetera. But then when the interviewer asked her, oh, it'd be the same as HIV, she said, oh, no, you can't use the PCR for it as a primary diagnostic tool for HIV. So you think, well, that's interesting. So COVID's been around for 5 minutes and she's saying that the PCR is fine. HIV, which I think is another invented thing, I'm not saying that AIDS doesn't exist, that exists, but the particle HIV has not been shown to exist. But it was interesting that Professor Lewin is talking about a virus they say has been around for decades and they can't calibrate the PCR accurately. You mentioned viral load, which is a misnomer. So the PCR is just an amplification tool. But I know that they use the inverse of the PCR cycle to say that that's what the viral load is. But essentially, it's just detecting whatever you ask it to detect, whether it's DNA or RNA. And that's another example. It's out in the open that this is fraudulent. Why can you declare that this PCR, which has just appeared, you know, has been validated?
Yes, indeed. Now, Mark, I don't know if you can recall, but there was a day a couple of years ago when our former Prime Minister Scott Morrison came out and said that the Bond University vaccine was cancelled overnight due to the fact that some participants in the trial had false positives to HIV. My question at the time, and I approached some physicians overseas who were attacking me on social media about some things I said, and I asked them, I said, would this be a false positive as such, or was it that they actually did test positive, but it was a dead part of the virus and it's in their system, so they still have the actual HIV antibody, which has been the definition that has supplied all of the fear for this over the last 40 years. He couldn't answer me and quickly sort of ran away, which I was impressed by, because clearly that this was just another guy just being a bully. He didn't like that anyone could step outside, you know, the main narrative. It was very, very confusing, but there was a reason why there was a false positive to all of this, and it was the idea that there was an HIV protein that was being used in this vaccine. Are you familiar with any of this that went on at the time?
Yeah, I think, did you say Bond University? I think it was
In Queensland.
Was it University of Queensland? Is that right?
Yes. Queensland.
Yep. No, I know all about that one. Yeah. Well, first of all, when they say HIV proteins, the HIV should be in quotes, because the proteins that they are talking about have not been shown to come from a viral particle. So they are proteins that are detected in human samples. But again, we've got the same problem that we have with the alleged SARS-CoV-2, is that the sequences and proteins have never, ever been shown to come from inside a viral particle. So that's the first confusion. With what happened there, I mean, that was a huge embarrassment for the HIV establishment, because again, they've already got the problem with what they say are specific, HIV antibodies. We already know that those antibodies turn out positive in about 70 different conditions. You know, they can be positive for tuberculosis. They can be positive for liver disease. They can be positive in IV drug addicts. There's a whole host of conditions with these allegedly specific, you know, antibodies. So that you just add that to the list of things that give a potential HIV antibody positive result. And it was a huge embarrassment, because I think I've looked at the Australian guidelines, and I think that by definition, if they had positive antibodies on more than a couple of occasions, then they're actually deemed to have HIV infection. But of course, you know, how could that be possible when they were just playing around with these injected vaccines? And of course, that they said, oh, don't worry, they definitely don't have HIV. But the rest of us are saying, well, that's interesting, because they've got HIV antibodies. And you've told us that if you've got HIV antibodies, you've been infected with HIV. So I think, that was a really public embarrassment. And there's been plenty like that for decades now with the whole HIV causes AIDS scam, basically, is what you'd have to call it. And again, just to clarify for the audience, we're not saying that AIDS doesn't exist. That does. It's a serious problem. But it's not caused by a transmissible agent. And that's been shown, in epidemiological studies. And there's no animal models where you can demonstrate that this particle transmits, et cetera. So, but I think the problem with the way some people interpreted what happened with the University of Queensland vaccine was that somehow, this relates to this whole bioweapon type thing where they're putting HIV sequences into viruses, in quotes, viruses, because that seems to have captured a lot of people's attention recently. And again, I just have to reiterate that these sequences that they're talking about, some people are saying that the SARS-CoV-2 virus, in quotes, has HIV, in quote, sequences in it as well. But neither of those, both the SARS-CoV-2 and the HIV, have been shown to come from a virus. That's just someone at some stage has declared that those sequences come from a virus. And then every time they detect them, they say, oh, we're detecting the virus again. But you can see the circular reasoning going on. If there was no step at the start to demonstrate that the sequences come from inside the viral particle, it's a complete fallacy. And it really comes back to this really simple thing of saying, well, what is a virus? And every single trail you follow back, they don't demonstrate that that's what they have.
It's such a massive topic. It's so confusing for many people because something exists, but it may not necessarily be the virus as it is sold to us and explained to us. And I guess one of the biggest things here is to dispel the fear around all of it. This is probably where medicine normally has been very good. The idea that you go to your GP and the first thing he says to you is, look, stop reading Google, just calm down because the anxiety level are up from the internet. And here it's almost like all of that's been reversed. Everyone is on high adrenal just exposure now because, COVID, and now the idea that the HIV and the testing and the billboards and go to this, go to that, and it's like everything's going to kill you in a second type of mentality. It's just, it's beyond anything. And what we're trying to do is be able to just calm people down and make them understand what's actually going on. So this is very, very useful to be able to explain to people that there's a lot more reading to be done, a lot more understanding to be done, and most importantly is to keep yourself, your nutritional levels up and keep yourself as strong as you possibly can to defend against anything that might come for you. Now, we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit the last segment and go through a little bit more of this great war on humanity using this COVID-19 narrative to make us comply to these global powers. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Yesterday, I commented that things don't just happen, which begs the question, who's behind all of the dastardly deeds that we see? From an attack on the power supply of three southwestern states with an explosion at the Hoover Dam, to wildfires affecting grid facilities throughout Texas, Oklahoma, and the Southeast, to wildfires in UK and Europe that are going to be used to push the climate change agenda, when in fact there's been precisely 0.00 degree centigrade in warming in the last 25 years. And most lethally of all, to all of the vaccine injuries that we're seeing globally pile up, over 250,000 in the United States now alone. Who's behind all of it? And the fact is, it doesn't matter. You don't need to know who's trying to break into your house at 3 a.m. All you need to know is that there's someone at the front door trying to jimmy the lock. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Here's that song again. Yay! Here's that song again.
For the 100th time today.
Here's that song again.
It's gonna be stuck in your head all day.
Yay! Here's that song again. It will make you cray cray.
You love your kids enough to watch that TV show a bajillion times. Yay! Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat for their age and size. Show them you love them. Keep them safe.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is today's News Talk and the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. And it's such a good moment in this conversation to just pause and think about your own experiences over the last couple of years and what it was that led you to either trust the system or not trust the system. So, Mark, where did we get led astray in terms of virology, and how is it that the vaccine has played such a massive role in consuming everything that we seem to eat, drink, and talk about over the last 2 years?
Yeah, well, I think, Jason, in a nutshell, I think what's happened with virology, and this is not unique to virology, it happened in other, or has happened in other areas of medicine, but I think they stopped following the scientific method. And if they ever did follow the scientific method, a lot of the research we've done suggests that they haven't. So what we have found is that they just don't do proper control experiments. And recently we've actually issued a challenge to the virology community to show us what they do in terms of showing what they say are culturing the viruses, and also demonstrating what they say is the genomes, the genetic material from the viruses. And we're saying that's all very well, but the way they're doing it is just a descriptive type fashion. They're not doing it with proper controls using the scientific method. So we've suggested that we do the experiments, but we blind them to the samples like a proper scientific study, so they don't know what they're getting. And we send them samples from some patients who they say have this fictional illness, COVID, patients who have other conditions, as well as people who have no conditions whatsoever. And we'll send them these blinded samples and they can tell us what they find, because from what we've seen and all the Official Information Act requests that we've done for the past few years, and the admissions that we've been able to get from some of the virologists themselves, that it's unbelievable. We're actually about to publish a second COVID fraud essay covering a lot of this, but they don't have controls, and which means that it's not science at all. It's so all of those papers that you see being published and people waving in your face and citing as evidence, almost from what we've seen, 100% of the time, they don't have valid controls, which means that they're not showing you science. They're just showing you a story or a narrative that's invented by whoever's written the paper. But if it was a scientific study, they'd have like a hypothesis that they'd test, and we'd be able to see if you could prove it wrong. So what they do is what we call descriptive science, which is not a good idea for biology. You shouldn't really be doing that anymore, because you know, if it's theoretical physics or astronomy and that sort of stuff, then that's descriptive science, because you can't really run proper tests. You can't do tests with it. You know, there's no empirical kind of tests. But with something like virology, when you've got the materials right in front of you, you should be doing scientific experiments following scientific methods. So, yeah, in summary, that's, to your question, that's where I'd say it's gone astray is the lack of the scientific method. And we find it really funny because, as you can imagine, we cop a lot of abuse and flack, not only from the mainstream establishment, but also people in the freedom community who still believe that there are viruses and SARS-CoV-2, etc. And, you know, they say, oh, you guys are pseudoscientists, or you're not following the science. But in fact, it's the complete vice versa. We're just pointing out to them that if you don't have controls and if you don't follow the scientific method, you can't make these claims, whether it's the PCR, genomics, antibodies, any of these things. And that's the tragedy. So, yeah, and then to your second question about the vaccines, I mean, it's an absolute disgrace because, as you mentioned earlier, you've got to take care of yourself and consider things like nutrition and other aspects of well-being. But the world we live in now is that people are being told the right thing to do is put on a mask, stay at home, and have a vaccine. And I would say that not one of those three can lead to any form of health whatsoever. Mm. And, you know, from my family's point of view, you know, Samantha and I, we have three boys, and we try and set an example for other people and say, well, we never wear face masks. We don't get vaccines. Our kids don't get vaccines. And we are a household of five that's, compared to most families, unbelievably healthy. And, you know, this is coming from, you know, obviously I was in the system for almost two decades. Samantha the same. She practiced for a similar amount of time. And we used to go along with this kind of stuff and think, oh yeah, you better get your vaccines, et cetera. And we've done a complete 180 degree turnaround on the basis that we did our own research and stopped outsourcing our health. And I'd encourage everyone to do the same. Like, outsourcing your health to other people is a huge mistake. I think even at the best of times, the public health authorities can be misguided. But I think we're in a phase now where they're just completely controlled by the pharmaceutical system and other external forces. And I'm not saying that the people in the health system are bad people. I think many of them believe that they are doing the right thing because they're following what they think is the best practice advice, which is policy often coming down from higher levels. But I think they don't realize how absolutely corrupt it's become. So, yeah, I think the vaccinated, particularly with the COVID vaccines, are doing so poorly, not only because of the incredibly unpredictable and toxic effects of the shots. And again, we've done some videos on this with a scientist in New Zealand trying to establish what's even in the shots, because there seems to be all sorts of undeclared constituents that have been going in as well. But I think it's, yeah, the danger of people thinking that by getting shots and putting on a face mask that they're going to get some sort of better outcome. And unfortunately, so many people have been brainwashed into this way of thinking that it's, yeah, it's really hard to get some of them out of it.
It feels like when we, no matter which way we approach this subject and no matter where we go in any conversation, but it seems like we are in a war against of trust, in that the establishment has basically squashed anything that dare challenge anything that they say. And on the other side of it, we realize that no matter what we look at, we arrive at this great, massive breach of trust that they have done at any and all levels in this scenario or scenarios that we live in. Testing is no good. The genome sequencing is no good. The understanding of the virus is unproven. The treatment is not working. The alternatives that may are ignored. Any debate is squashed. It just seems to be the same, same, and same. And therefore, you must arrive, and we've only got a couple of minutes left, but you must arrive at a conclusion, therefore, that this has to be part of some form of agenda, which probably takes us right back to the beginning of the paper that you wrote. How do you clarify? Did you arrive at this conclusion or your introduction as the conclusion of your studies, or did you realize that it came from here and then you went and explored it deeply? How did you come about this idea that this all comes from the very top?
I think it was just the how open the fraud was that they seemed to have got so bold with it. And part of the reason we were also a bit more awake was that my wife, Sam, co-authored a book called Virus Mania, which documents or outlines the kind of pandemic playbook and how for the past few decades they've tried to have, you know, they had the HIV alleged epidemic, they had swine flu, you know, bird flu, all this kind of stuff, but they never really became worldwide events. But you could definitely see this pattern of the globalist organizations getting involved with these fake pandemics and using them as Trojan horses to bring about other measures. So, yeah, I mean, we also look into other areas. We don't present this publicly, but we're fully aware of the financial system reset that's going on and the other aspects of the globalist agenda happening. But Yeah, I think it's kind of, it's almost frustrating because people spend so much time debating COVID-19 that at the end of the day, it's simply a Trojan horse and it will disappear. There'll be another narrative that will come along and COVID will be forgotten. But by then, a whole lot of worse things would have been happening around the world, whether it's, you know, losing your personal rights or being forced to have a lower standard of living. But it's essentially a medical tyranny being used to bring about other globalist agendas.
Well, it's been a terrific hour. It's flown by and very, very enlightening to get a fresh perspective on this war that everyone who's listening is well aware of. I've been speaking with Dr. Mark Bailey. The website, Mark, very quickly, is what, drsambailey.com, is that correct?
Yep, that's the best website. That's where all the articles, videos and resources can be found. So drsambailey.com.
Got to go. Thank you very much. You're on TNT Radio.